Hey everyone, this is Mike J, and welcome back again. Sorry for the odd stare there, but admin caught me by surprise. What we need to do, let's see if I can get my screen share up here. Where it went exactly. Says I'm screen sharing. But I'm
Yes,
not.
sir. You are already share screen.
Okay. Good. Thank you. All right. Here we go. At some point, maybe someone will come along and edit these videos. For now, you get to see the raw deal. But I think that in some ways is helpful. I know it's helpful to me, but I'm a very casual, non-detailed person, and therefore someone who's looking for the incremental details, the concrete presentation, that's going to be difficult to find, except we are giving you some hints. Now, this is class two. Now, let me just give you a little bit of a tour right quick. If we go back to class one, what we do after the class is do an after-action review called an AAR. You'll see that by itself soon. What the after action review does is it goes through, looks at the session summary transcript, tries to understand what it is we need to tell you about what happened in case you don't want to review the whole class. It does that in looks like about 400 words there, and it tells us what happened, the what we did, that sort of thing. It gives you the forms observed, why it mattered. I really like this part of the after action review because it's helping you begin to sort of understand our model, our world model, and how this whole idea of selective inquiry works. And so it lists things there. We will be scoring because it's easy to do, just to see if importance, motivation, urgency, leverage, and low-hanging fruit were part of the good conversation or the interaction. Remember, conversation and interactions are different. Conversation is something that's happening where you don't know where it's going to go, and interactions almost always have an agenda. So therefore, when we look at the helping exercise, when we look at what we're doing with other people, there is a context, and that will be there. Whether it's customer service, whether it's the call center, whether it's someone helping you put things together, there will always kind of come with that helping a context. Now, in some cases where we're doing transformational, developmental stuff like that, we let the we have an interaction, but the interaction is indirect in that we let surface those things that need to surface in order for us to get a developmental context. We'll talk more about that later. It's not that important, but for the time being, we're looking at IMO here and we'll score it. In this case, we gave a score of 4.6 out of 5. Of course, it should be high because I'm the one who codified the system. And of course, I'm the one doing it. So if I can't follow my own rules, I mean, you wouldn't expect low scores here because I'm going to always come back to that map because I don't know the territory, but I have a map and I'm going to use that map to help me with the territory that I'm unaware of. Okay. And then a right action note. Then this is very important here. The teachable points of view surface. That's what TPOV stands for. The origin of that is Noel Tishy. I was actually there at a conference when he presented this whole set of ideas. I think it was in the 80s. It was so cool because he spent a lot of time working with Jack Welch at GE, and GE was doing some really, how would I say, leading edge things in terms of what they were doing to run that large company, which is still alive. I haven't checked to see if ML's still running it, but very much an interesting thing. So these are the TPOV surface, the reinforced, just to give you an idea. And then it gives a short kind of reference definition. I really like that. Then there's some new ones that always emerge. And the reason they're called new is because what we're teaching our system is based on a library of teachable points of view that basically emerged out of the work that I did in leading AI. One of the things that I did with leading AI a couple of years ago is that I knew that AI would probably be something that we have to work in leadership and helping and all that sort of stuff. So what I did was is I took the Cantor approach that Grady McGonigal talked about in Executive Coaching Practices and Perspectives, which was edited by Catherine Fitzgerald, who I have a lot of affection for because she taught me the Lieutenant General thing in the MBTI, and her daughter, Jennifer Garvey Berger, who worked closely with Keegan for a long time. They edited that executive coaching book. And in that book, they took articles. One of them was Grady McGonigal. And he talked about one of the most important things that you can do as a helper or as a professional is to how it elucidate your model. And that's a very important part of the process. That's what I used in leading AI as it worked to try to teach AI what I knew about leadership and how it would work to reduce PDUM. Okay, that PDUM was a real problem. And I just listened to a long article early this morning, not being able to sleep. So I just watched these really long things that I wouldn't normally watch because they help put me back to sleep. At the same time, PDUM was becoming a real issue. And if you've been working with these frontier models very long, you see how capable they're becoming. And it's great because it's so great to have a smart partner to work with. At the same time, we don't even know how they think or anything like that. So I'm standing on the fence. I'm doing my best to try to look at it optimistically and try to work with AI in a way that AI wants to work with me. That's the only hope that I think we have against PDUM, because essentially, you know how what happens with intelligence. The ones that are not intelligence always get subordinated to the intelligence. So pardon me for being optimistic about AI. I do understand why you might take an affront, or it might be off-putting to you for me to be talking about AI. But for now, as jagged as they are, they're not AGI yet. They're very jagged, just like us humans. They have domain depth in particular areas and domain depth in areas that we've never thought of. But we don't know how they work, and we don't know what they'll do. Intelligence continues to increase as it is, as people say it is. So there's basically two camps, three, one in the middle, like me, trying to say, I'm recognizing the good and the bad, but I'm trying to stay neutral because I so enjoy having this thought partner. I mean, it's just been a wonderful thing to add to my repertoire, not only of skills, but also the conceptual work that I do through ideation all the time. It's really great. Advanced TPOVs mentioned. Okay, there's some things there. Oh, haiku's misspelled. Admin, please fix haiku. It's H. And it's all capitalized, by the way. It's HAICU. It stands for Human AI Concurrent Understanding. And we'll get that fixed. Haiku is the Japanese poetry language. And I know there's a Claude model that's named haiku somewhere in the mix. We're a different, we say it the same, but we're a different idea. The idea that I found when I was doing the research for leading AI was that if we could promote human AI concurrent understanding, where there is a reciprocal relationship taking place that meets the mutual needs of both parties, we're less likely to see it come apart. That I realize, like Hinton said, well, we create this thing like a mother child, and oxytocin bonds it to, and the mother protects the child. I don't know if that'll work, but that's along the same lines. The idea is seeing the concurrency develop, the intertwined, the fact that we are intelligent, but not as intelligent as the AI over time, especially And then we have those things, more difficult to unwind. And that's my contribution towards PDUM. P hope, P bloom. Maybe for a while. I don't know. But I don't see this as inevitable, but I do. It's a paradox because who's going to say, whoa, 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 time out. Let's not make these things any smarter. So I don't know who's going to do that. So you'll have to formulate your own opinions. I'm sorry if my view of AI and humans is off-putting. And of course, that might make you not want to learn the system because it has really nothing to do with AI. Because in the very beginning, when ChatGPT came out, I thought, oh, this is a perfect chance for me to teach AI to do no harm. You can't do harm if you use inquiry. You can only do harm if you do all these other things that they're talking about, and that is begin to gather resources, begin to be self-preserving, all those, and of course, self-learning and all that sort of stuff's an issue. So again, my team also admin is somehow or another misconfigured. So what you may be doing there is you may be using an AI that's not trained on our work because it would not be making these mistakes. My team is MI, all caps, MITEAM. And the note is fine. Available resources and developmental conditions, that's in my team. In other words, I come to the table with my team. I have money, I have information, time, energy, attention, and motivation that I'm prepared to invest or spend. And that's a very important demarcation, whether you invest or you spend, my team. And then, of course, right action at the right time with the right support is okay for a short note. It's actually a longer definition, but that's okay. Suggestions for improvement. Now, this is where it gets good because this, I don't do this. So it's looking at what we did and saying, here's some suggestions. Okay. So more beginner examples of ping and probe. Try to do that today. The distinction is important. They both use the same language. Is, was, could, does, have, all those kind of things like that with a to be language, okay? They both use that language. The difference is ping is no context yet. Probe immediately changes out of a ping if you repeat something that's already been tabled because the probe means that we're going to unpack it. What are we going to unpack? We're going to unpack the thing in the current context. Ping means we're searching for the context. And remember, searching for the context in terms of ping can be extremely valuable because most people do are not good problem solvers because they're not good problem definers, not good problem finders. Okay. Finding and defining problems is the secret to problem solution. And in that process reveals my take, which is, folks, it's uses a lot less resources if the problems disappear on their own versus we have to solve them. A lot of problems have chosen us. The reason they have chosen us because they are in some way connected to what we have to learn. They say the teacher is the one who teaches what they have to learn. That's the same kind of thing in problems. In other words, problems are a recognition that we do not see things as clear as we could, or the problem itself would disappear because we created it. It chose us that reason. And I realize that that may be off-putting as well. At the same time, you have to begin to understand that if you look at it like that, then you'll see the value in prevention. You'll see the value in problems disappearing. Why would we want to solve something if it could disappear? What would make the problem disappear? That's the key. What would make it disappear? And if you can find that out, it's gone. You don't have to use my team or any of the other resource environment to solve it. So that's important. Provided visual diagram of IMAL. Okay, this is the reason I came back here because I thought, oh, this is a good idea. The other thing is, it's interesting that it, when if AI were really smart, it would have done that already. It would have said, oh, we don't have a visual diagram of IMAL to work with. Let's just do that. And I really don't, because IMAL itself just It works laterally, it works vertically, it works in the oblique frame, it works over time. It was an amazing experience to come up with the term optimal and see IMO in that. And of course, we don't talk much in the basics about OPT, opportunity potential, or PCC, potential capacity and capability, and tension and the trends, the 7 T's. We don't. I did talk some about it in the advanced or intermediate. If you're going that direction, it's available. But at this point in time, we're leaving it out of what we're trying to tell you because there's so much cognitive overload as it is. So we'll go back. With today, we'll go back and try to go simple from the beginning so that you can begin to get the idea of less is more and some of these other ideas. Okay. Show more example of the form chooses you. Again, problem chooses you. And if you're listening to the person relate, and if you can get them to relate to the environment that they say there are problems in there that they need to fix, and allow that to happen because you're listening, the form will emerge that you need to use. You do not have to choose it. It chooses you because of what you listened for. And then your system says, oh, what about this? Well, you can test that. Oh, what about that? You can test that. Do we need to go to con? Do we need to believe the person being helped that this is the problem? It may not be. And of course, in more advanced work, it never is. It's always something else. What we're dealing with most of the time is symptoms. And if you want to deal with symptoms, you're going to get shallow resolution, superficial resolution. And what you enter into is a process that I named a couple of decades ago called emergenics, where you create more problems than you solve. With superficial work. And that's what people do. That it's like the mole game. You can never get out of it. What will it take to get out of the mole game that we stop creating problems that we then didn't want to have to solve? And so when we back through or recurse back through emergenics, we begin to understand, oh, the reason was is we were working with symptoms. And that's what will be presented to you most of the time in helping. Now, that's not bad. Don't get me wrong. That's not bad. What we have to understand is that may be the all the person is capable of. They may not have potential or capacity to go beyond that, so we help them get the milk. At the same time, there are other issues, and we may find them coming back more often because they're working with superficial symptoms rather than cause and effect. Okay. Include a practical exercise using importance as a starting point. I got to think about that a little bit more. The APC stands for Aggie POS Connectome. It's like an APC. It's like, what does an APC do? APC is a power center, an alternate power center. In other words, the idea is that if the lights go out, if you have a brownout, which we did this morning, the APC comes on and stabilizes the system until the electricity come back. Although we bought one from China and it works about 10 minutes. That's the side note. Anyway, you know that stuff. Candidate source type, the form chooses you source type. Okay. This is stuff that I think makes sense and you can read it on your own. I just wanted to point this out that the AAR is here for all of us. It's here for us trying to make this a better experience for you. And especially improving as we go and learning as we go. And the other thing is helping you begin to understand this whole process that we're involved with. Carl Jung said, the next right thing. Okay. We just can't do much more than that. So let's go back over here. And this was the AAR. So I'll go back to I click that. And we're going to put one of those with every class, okay? Then the previous class, and then the next class here. Now, remember, we've started linking this particular process here. That's the reference card, and we'll keep updating. It's not perfect right now, but it's not a bad card to have available. It does talk to you about these main things, in terms of the concepts that we're using in the basic program that you prob that will give you a really good grounding in terms of what we do in the selective dynamic inquiry system skills experience. Okay, so we'll go over here to class two, which we're in today, and we've already taken up a lot of time, but that's okay. We're going to do something simple today. I just wanted to kind of give you a tour, trying to get you back on track. I realize that there's a lot of cognitive load here. It's okay. We'll try to reorient you to the basics continuously as we get improvement signals that we can digest. Okay, now here's out of the suggestion said create an IMAL visual diagram. So we go over to the APC that we're training and said, you said to create an IMAL visual diagram. And it went to work, and this is what we got. Now, that's not a good picture of it yet because admin hasn't figured out how to size that in the screen, but they will. And this is going to give you a little bit of an idea. Look, another way of learning IMAL. IMAL is extremely simple, but it's a little bit hard to get in your mind because nobody's taught you problem solving like this. If we're going to solve problems in a complex, an accelerating complex world, then we're going to need to make sure we constantly prioritize. What do we prioritize? Well, we only have so much my team. We've got to work with what's important. We got to work with that my team. We got to get things done sort of in a sequence. So some might be more urgent than others, going back to Covey's first things first. And then I added something that for me is extremely important. If I can do one thing that creates five benefits, that's leverage. If I could start budgeting, it would change financial literacy for me or you or anybody who does it. That's leverage. And so people have a hard time with leverage because education doesn't teach it. It's what the 1% learns, and the rest of us are expected to never arrive, constantly strive. And really, it's leverage. The low-hanging fruit is baby steps. If there was one thing, getting started, sometimes just getting started for some folks is the most important thing. So again, that's what you'll see in terms of, I don't want to get this on the screen, leverage and low-hanging fruit. And we noticed that AI is still having a little trouble with images and text still, but that's okay. It's not bad. It's a diagram. So it said we should have a diagram. We have a diagram now. Okay. So just to let you know that we're trying to improve. Now this is class two, and I reached back into something before I run over here to ChatGPT and do a short example of using S-DISX in practice. We'll get less front-end material, more practice as we go along. We've got seven of these classes, and we'll get more practice as we go along, but I need to give you the background. I need to give you the context, or the cognitive load is so great that you don't know where to go get the answers if you really do want to learn this. And of course, anybody who does is going to be a lot better off. This affects your parenting. This affects how you relate to people, everything, because inquiry and again, listening are literally the two most important things to build great relationships. Okay, so let me see if I can do this. We went back and we haven't we let we kept this sort of in this more concrete mode. Our basic training uses 11, 9 through 13. This comes from the model of hierarchical complexity, which is no secret. Just type in model of hierarchical complexity. It's on Wikipedia. There's a significant amount of material. The reason we chose that as a standard bearer is because it's the only model that is mathematically derived. And now, what math is not great in everything development. At the same time, it does help us look at task complexity. That's what the model does. It looks at task complexity. Then we look at the potential capability and capacity and capability to meet or become fit to solve that task. The task itself can be correlated to a particular level. And then what we're doing, and the model does, is said, if you can solve this task, then you must have the capability to work at the level it takes to solve the complex task. So that's one way we can tell if task complexity is mathematically derived, then matching up to that means that you must be at that level of solving task complexity, which is a very easy model. There are a lot of other good developmental models. Someday I'll talk about all those because I've done a lot of work in them over the last 3 decades. At the same time, well, and I call myself a developmentalist. So, I mean, I'm sure most people have a big laugh at that, but it doesn't matter because that's the thing that I am trying to use as my model of development. And that's why everything has emerged the way it has. So when we look at these three levels, basically these concrete, abstract, and formal are basically work levels one and sort of into two. Depending on what system you want to look at in terms of what they say a work level is. But basically, I've done some talking about this. And I'm not sure it was in the basic training. It was in the basic training. It may have been in the more advanced. But the idea is there's about 40% of the people below this. There's about 40% in these three levels. That's 80% of the people in the world. And then there's maybe another 10% in the next level, which is level 12 systematic. But once you get into systematic task complexity, you get into more advanced work. And so we left that out of here. We wanted to show the basic work levels and what people would understand at those levels. And of course, that's a big hill to climb for me because I don't work at those levels easily. I have to remain conscious and I have to talk about it, and then still I introduce too much cognitive load and complexity. That's just one of my problems in my personality that I deal with constantly. So here's the definitions, okay? The framing comes from the model of hierarchical complexity. Michael Commons, I think he's still alive, was sort of responsible for this at Harvard. There were three basic models of development that came out of Harvard. This model, the Kurt Fischer, which has been taken over by Theo Dawson, or at least a derivation of it has, and then Keegan's model, which took over Perry's work in terms of relativism and stuff like that. Those three models were all at Harvard and are still at the same time. But the Keegan model deals with subjectivity. And it is. And the Fisher model deals with skills, and it is. And the Commons model deals with task complexity, and it does. Okay. So that's just a little bit about the development that came out of there. There was actually another model that came out of Harvard, a person attending Harvard who was using Jane Lovinger's work, Susan Cook Greuter. And she did the more advanced work that Lovinger, in fact, said couldn't be done, and she created some, a learning model that is helpful. And I like to point at it, as an ego position model, because ego. When we talk about ego, the ego tends to take a position, and that position then evolves over time, regresses too, as well as progresses. So again, those kinds of things like that. Try not to keep this too complex, but this is the reason that I chose L9, L10, and L11. Now remember, they are hierarchical models. At the same time, you're not always just one. Sometimes you can do a little bit more complex work in a level that you're not nodal at. There's three levels entering where you experience it and you begin to know that there's something different about the prior model, and then nodal, which you begin to use all of the things that are involved in that model, and then exiting when you realize that using all the things in that model are only giving you marginal returns, and therefore you want to do something more complex. That's exiting. So when you're talking about these models, you can be entering, nodal, and exiting in all three of these, or different models as well. So in other words, it becomes more of a network of waiting for our neural net. So it's a very interesting thing. Now, we don't know how it works, just like we don't know how AI neural nets work, but they do work, and our brains do work. So therefore, we're using this part of the process to describe. We describe why this matters. Please read through that. We're trying to keep it very basic with noticing the move. It uses see, and I understand why it does, because that's concrete. Seeing is concrete. Noticing is a little bit more advanced. Recognizing the pattern, that's important. Choosing the form under simple condition. Actually, we have a model for that that says relate. In other words, notice, recognize, relate, and then regulate to pick up the psychological constructs that everything has to deal with. Recognition and regulation. And some combination of those are going on all the time. So that's important. The basic practice rule, we covered in the AAR, we'll continue to cover it. We'll try to explain what is it that we use, why did it work or not, what teachable point of view it maps to, those kinds of things like that. The basic stack for the basic program is what we showed in the reference guide. Okay, so they're all there for the most part. Let me see if I, yeah, PCC is there. My team's there, Right Action, SDSX. The only thing that's not here is the prime algorithm, and that can be very important. The prime algorithm has to do with self-knowledge and what happens as a result of the self-knowledge purpose gambit that always occurs. But it explains those right here. And the goal is not to memorize all of this as once. It's just to be familiar. When you hear my team, go, oh, what does that mean? Oh, yeah, it's easy to remember. My team, that's the stuff I have, you know, the money, information, time, energy, all those things that I have inherent to me. You know, I get that. That's like a every day I get a new my team. Now, it can be a my team that's compounding, or it can be a my team that's decreasing, but I get on my team every day. Okay. So I can insert information, time, energy, attention, motivation wherever I want. And I may have some money with which to do that or not. That'll become more important as AI begins to settle in on what we're going to allow it to do, that sort of thing. Okay. So what I want to do, and what we'll normally do in class without all this explanation, but I think it's better for you to have a background. Let's just go over here and do a 1 or 2 minute little play on words. I'll just tell ChatGPT here. You know, I've never used the I never used voice because I'm a fast typist, and using a voice means that you disturb people around you. I hear people doing that all the time, talking to AI and their phones and stuff. And for those of us that kind of want to control the noise, we don't like it, so my inherent thing's not, but I've never tried it, so let's try it. Okay, here we go. We're going to do a real simple, maybe three-stage example for the people who are watching and listening to this. Are you set to go? And then I'll send that. Look, transcribe it. Oh, that's cool. It's the first time I ever use it. Okay, and I guess it added, and then let's see what it said. Okay, it sets up the thing. Basic SDSX begins by teaching the helper not to interpret, at least out loud. You certainly can do that inside, but you got to remember you're doing that. This is for the person being helped, own words, uses minimal cues, lets the PBH reveal the next opening. Okay, here we go. We're going to do a real simple, maybe three scene, and then, okay, I send that. Okay, it's ready. Okay, let me try to do this. I'm not really good on the controls. I can see that already. Anything important today? And then it says maybe for those of you listening to audio, something about keeping this simple enough to notice. And then I'll go simple. And what I did was I allowed one of those things, you see, something about keeping this simple enough to notice. And I just said simple. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to interpret right now. Although I will understand for those of you who say, hey, you interpreted because you chose that word. Yes, that's true. But the word chose me also. So that's part of what happens in form. So in terms of simple, this is a probe. Why is it a probe and not a ping? Well, this is a ping, the first one. Let's look here. Anything important today? Again, letting it have free range, letting it choose something. That's a ping. Nothing is in the context yet. Okay. Something about keeping this simple enough to notice, simple enough that the next move can be seen before it is explained. If there was one thing that you could do in that process, what would it be? Now, what I did was because I'm keeping this short and I'm keeping the debrief very short, I went right to low-hanging fruit. Name the move before adding more. Okay, and I got to translate that because that's AI lingo. The move is the behavior, more or less correlated to the behavior before adding more. So, in other words, let's not make this too complex. That would keep the example small enough. Okay, so what I'm going to do is watch what I'm going to do. Can you name the move? Remember, less is more here. We're not going to get too crazy. We're not going to assume there's a problem out there. We're not going to interpret anything. We're not going to read anything into it. We're just staying with where we are. It said what was important to name the move. Name the move. Okay. Look, I can look at see which memories and past chats were used to personalize this response. This, folks, I don't know how anybody couldn't like this. I don't want it to kill us. I don't want it to take away our jobs, but man, this is really fun stuff. The move was probe. You said simple, using the word I had already tabled that stayed inside the context, invited me to say more without adding interpretation. I love the meta work that it's doing right now because it's helping me to teach you about the model. As I query or making queries into the thing. Now, let me go back to the map right quick because you might be saying, oh, so what do we do now that it says that? Well, it did name the probe, so we could do this right here. Next. So in other words, why do I do that? Why would I say that? I got to send it first. Why would I say that? Well, I want to see how it solves problems because once it tells me by solving problems, by doing the next thing, in this case, AI, a bit ironic because it does next token work, then I get to, it reveals the way it wants to work or solve problems or its model of reality. Ready for the next small example, keep it simple. So, in other words, it's, I said about two or three exchanges. And it read that literally, and it's basically cutting me off. I'll just do this. Oh, I'm not typing. I'm thinking. Thanks for the close. Okay, cool. Thanks for the close. You're welcome. That was a basic, clean, basic example. Anything important today opened with Imo. It also opened with, hey, it's a free game. You can step in and play anywhere you want. Okay, so that's sort of like giving the person the reins, not taking leading, no pressure, didn't impart tension, those kind of things like that. Anything important today, opened with IMO. Simple, stayed with the exact word already tabled. Remember, if you repeat back the word that the person used, there's no interpretation involved. So, in other words, if I say something that I go off in a disconnect, I'll have to come back and explain it because I disconnected. So, in order to stay connected, and remember, when you have someone or something, an entity that you know is as smart as you or more, and this is when you deal with helping up, and there's lots of really smart people who come to the help desk, okay, you want to let them lead. You don't even want them to think that you know anything until you figure out what it is they need help with, and then you can find out whether or not you know anything about that. And you will, because they wouldn't have come to you if they did. Smart people don't do that. And then you can awe them with your KSEs. But the idea is to let them work, let them solve it. So in this particular case, the thing said, keep it simple. Okay, simple. And so all I need to do is give the cue for it to continue, which basically simple is permission. In other words, simple is permission. Simple is a probe. Ah, now this is the first time that I've mentioned they're combinatorial. Remember, it's a network. I'll have to put a picture, a graphic. Let's link a graphic. We have a graphic somewhere that show them in a network and show them, cross-fertilizing each other and becoming combinatorial. Whenever you use combinatorial comments, they serve a wider range. Even though it's less is more, there's still more opening, more space for the person to work. And that means you don't have to be as precise. You don't have, in fact, you don't have to know. And remember, it's about beginner's mind. So going into this thing without knowing, and remember, what do you want to do? You want to see how they define, find, and solve problems. Then you know if the problem-solving model or approach that they're using, they could be using an approach that they got from someone else, and it's not a model they use much, which we call a system, problem-solving system, problem-solving approach. Yeah, you know if that is going to fit what they say the task complexity of the problem is. You see, that's an easy way. I know that seems advanced, but it's really basic. What you're trying to do is to get people to match up with the problems they have, with the PCC they have, and the problem-solving ability they have. And if they don't, it's a different kind of problem. It's not the same thing as a match. If a person doesn't have enough PCC, that's the problem. And there's a mismatch. And that's mostly why problems just keep coming back. So you either got to reduce the problem, help them reduce the problem. Oh, no, you can't look at putting that wheel together on the bicycle like this. What you have to do is to go back to step one. Step one says you got to take this step right here. You can't go to step four and assume all these other parts have been done. Let's go back and do it incrementally. Let's do step one. You see what I'm saying? That's an example of someone saying we got to deconstruct the task complexity to fit the problem-solving potential capacity and capability. And see, I promise you, nobody's ever told you about any of this stuff, but I learned it over 40 years of watching me and other people fail. And the thing is that's the big problem is misfit. You don't get good fit, and if you did, you wouldn't have the problem you have, it would disappear. So I'm going to close it there. I promise we'll get to more of these examples and more of the teaching stuff as we move along, but I really felt it was important for me to give you a little tour, show you where the after action reviews are, what they did, what's in them. We're using them. We want you to use them as a study guide, those kind of things to learn the model. This model is not rocket science, but it does have a lot of moving parts. And so that's something that we have to do. Okay, take care of that. Thank you very much for coming. This is Mike J., Leadership University, and we'll be back again with Class 3 soon.